Good morning, welcome back. I changed a bit what I had in mind this morning, trying to follow a bit the discussion we had yesterday. And so what I'm going to talk about is some examples in this debate about privatization or, in a sense, abandoning the public sector. Before that, I would try to explain problems that are affecting even local authority museums, and which are better off compared to the state, the superintendency or the state museums, but still present serious problem for managing solutions, as you will see. So basically then I would try to understand why one of the few alternatives, I mean, if you are unable to reform public administration, one of the few alternatives is simply going out, abandoning the kind of status of public sector. And I'll talk about the institutional transformation and the wave of transformation, curiously enough, in foundations also in Italy. That's, I mean, this commonality of terminology between what you were saying yesterday and what is happening in Italy is so interesting in itself, would deserve some sort of studies of genealogy of laws or something like that. And also a lot of a few examples and the risk, the problems, the pitfalls in this kind of institutional transformation. And some focus on the notion of what the French define the statization, say in the English with the English accent, which is a word that does not exist in English, by the way, but it's very clear to all of us, perhaps, in the Roman code countries. So the question of local authority museum, it's interesting not just because of the numbers. I mean, as I told you yesterday, it was 1,500 museums in Italy are local authority museums, so it's close to the half. And interesting enough, there's now research on these museums. There are a lot of debate on devolution, and but it's a sort of magic solution. I mean, when you transfer from the center to the periphery or to the centralized to the local authorities a museum, if you don't have the managerial tools, nothing really changes. So it's a question. The devolution, decentralization is not, in my view, a geographical issue, is an organizational issue, and is never addressed. So there are less problems, as I mentioned, but very serious problem of accountability and lack of responsibility, as I will show you right now. Talking about the museum, the archaeological museum in Bologna, and what I refer to as the unfair game of budgetary control in local authority museums. So I'm focusing mostly on performance and the measurement of performance, which is a basic issue in management, of course. And this is the one of the two aspects in the measuring performance in museums, one of the several, not just the two. And we have here the evolution of visitors over time. This is 1991 to 1997. That's a bit old case studies, but if I'm talking about what's happening now, is completely different kind of things that you cannot understand if you don't understand this. So if you look at these figures, and you are the, let's say, the city manager of Bologna, and the city manager is obsessed by one parameter, which is cost per user, whether it is safety, whether it is traffic, whether it is whatever. It's obsessed by these metrics. Now, what the comment, I mean, we go back on the cost later on, but just looking at visitors, if this is the trend in visitors, what would be your comment? How is the performance of this museum? It's improving? It's good? It's bad? It's bad. It's bad. From 140,000 to almost 80,000 visitors. That's very bad. come on, be careful. Try to understand exactly what these figures mean. And if you go inside, there is an additional issue which is so difficult in management accounting and in management control in organizations, which is the organizational relevance of information. So if you start talking to the people, say, oh, what the hell happened? Why are you missing almost one half of your audience? Say, come on, that's not true. We are organizing some events, some exhibitions. We have our permanent exhibition, some temporary exhibitions, and from time to time, we are asked by the cultural department simply to host some exhibitions organized by others. So if you work on the data with an organizational meaning, so whether it is temporary or permanent exhibition, the exhibitions organized, managed by the people in the museum. The exhibitions and the numbers that are under the control and responsibility of the museum, that's a completely different picture. So you have the, if you can see the picture, I can't. So this is the red line, is the what the people in the museum is responsible for. The other are simply exhibitions that are hosted. So in 1991, there was a huge, beautiful exhibition of Il Guercino, organized by the superintendente, that was simply hosted in this museum. So that was a good performance of the superintendente, not the museum director. And the fact that later on there was nothing more of this kind of huge, big event is not the responsibility, the fault of the director of the museum. So even with just the simple unambiguous data of visitors, it could be so misleading. Dear city manager, you don't have to see the total. This totally misleading will be, you know, will destroy, you know, the kind of, if you are using this in terms of performance evaluation, addressing attention to people, managing people, that will be completely misleading from a logical point of view, a disaster from an organizational point of view. You can be responsible for things that are under your control. That's a basic rule in management control. And that's so fascinating. Can you imagine the numbers of services that are provided by a municipality in a town like Bologna? I mean, I think that European municipalities are amongst the most complex organizations all over the world. We do everything, you know, from the birth to the death of a people. We provide services to any age, for any kind, from the nursery, education, burial, and all what is in them. How can the city manager be sensible, understand the specific problem of a curator, a specific problem of an exhibition? That's the risk of management accounting, of, you know, performance evaluation. It's really try to risk to misunderstand all local meanings and things that need to be under control, with the risk that become another additional, paradoxically, another additional bureaucratical thing, more than tool to manage. So, and this is, sorry, this is a bit complicated, a bit of numbers, but this is the table that is prepared by the cultural department for each individual museum and for each other cultural entities. And Bologna is a very well developed administration in terms of data, in terms of management accounting, in terms of administration in general. It's been one of the best run cities for years. In the same years, and the end of the 90s and the beginning of this century, I've been involved in municipalities such as Torino, Venice, Milan, which had much less clear data about museums. Basically, a museum does not exist as an entity in itself. It's a part of the municipality. So you have the expenditure in case revenues for culture, for theater and museums as a whole, but you don't have individual information. As a joke, what I'm saying is the problem with the Italian Museum is not that they are non-profit organizations. They are non-organizations at all. So they are unfinished, incomplete kind of organization. So this is interesting. This is a monitor, the way of monitoring the performance. And here you have numbers, financial numbers per years, and then you have personnel, consumption, utilities, and what they call specific consumption. It's a very local jargon. And I remember that was at the beginning of my research in 97, 96, and I was talking with someone who said the museum, the archaeological museum, cost 2.4 billion lira. And I was talking with the director, come on, we're spending 900 million. It's a mess with million and with the euro. So they were, she was referring to this number, and they were referring to this number. So what is this kind of, sorry to show you a bit of numbers and accounting numbers. This is really an interesting element. There are no an income statement for each individual museum. They are just a list of costs, which makes a difference. And not only this is a virtual, in a sense, list of costs. No one is really responsible of this number. I mean, the personnel is similar, parallel with the ministry yesterday. The personnel is in charge of the people at the city level of personnel. The utilities are run by the economato, by patrimony, other people. And I remember was writing the paper, my life is, you know, I have the time of writing, and I was close to publish the book, and I had to have the update version, and I had to wait till April of the following year to have the 98 data. So basically, the director do not see the data at all unless in April. It's not a data that are used to make decision. I mean, we are spending too much. Bloody hell, stop making telephone call, stop doing that. No, that's something that simply is put on your table 4 months later. Who cares? Nobody really cares. So this is really a unmanaged kind of mass of resources. No one is responsible for that. And that is always the case with public sector. I mean, that was the case in Pompeii. That's a bit different, a bit more analytically determined. We know the cost of personnel, but we don't know who's responsible for that. And that's one first point. The second point is interesting here. You know, there is on the right side, there are some sort of performance indicator. They are just talking about cost. They are trying to understand a bit of the performance from the demand side and the professional side. So they're talking about visitors, but it's not just simply measuring visitors. They're measuring visitors without splitting what is under their responsibility, by the way, but something that we already mentioned. There are some other indicators in terms of numbers of hours of the museums, of the collections, and I mean, compared to museums that are in a very critical situation, this is open 314 days a year, so basically, apart from Monday, and apart for a couple of 2 or 3 days, they are always open. So in terms of level of services, it's very good. And other kind of data that can be addressed. Also, what is interesting, they are trying to measure in a way the didactic, the teaching activity. I mean, it's not simply visitors, it's teaching, it's helping students to understand. So the outcome of a museum is something more articulated. And also, there is an attention, and it's interesting, the fact that there is an attention on the scientific activity, as it is called. And what is funny is, it's interesting in a good sense, you're trying to keep in to take into account the relevance of scientific activities for curators. What is really funny is the way in which you measure it, which is the number of objects that are restored during the year, whether it is the small church or the whole building, just it counts one, or I mean the number of objects that are inscribed in the electronic catalog. So when you finish the catalog, the all your coins, it seems that you have a collapse in performance. Simply you have done it. So it's very mechanistic, but it's interesting. If I am I were a director of this museum, how can I use this kind of table to better manage, to increase my... And that what I will start doing. Let's make a sort of fiction. If that museum were run as a private museum, all other things being equal, not changing any kind of logic, just simply in terms of accounting representation. Sorry to talk about accounting, but that's crucial here. And so, it's the first step, which is not that difficult. Put together cost and revenue. Step one, that's part one. That's what I did, which is important because you can understand, I mean, there are costs, but there are also, and this is the cost more or less of one of the years in 97, but there are also inflows, there are also revenues, the ticket, which is not that much, but it's better than nothing, as we say in Italy. It's much better than nothing, 9%. There is a bookshop, there's something. And if you put something similar to that, you will address attention of people in thinking of that. This is, once again, even more virtual than before. I mean, if the bookshop increases the sales, the money will go directly to the municipality. It's not a local incentive to increase, but, and there is not this kind of direct allocation of resources. But at least it's a sort of simulation. And then I start thinking in a bit more sophisticated way. In reality, if you think at what happened in municipalities, I mean, of course, as normally inside organizations, I mean, information costs. So sometimes there is a value in tracing the information, sometimes it's too costly. So most of the time, inside organization, you exchange resources in kind. I'm doing something for you, I'm doing something for you, and not necessarily I'm sending you a bill or any written paper. So this information is simply lost. So let's try to think whether it's some kind of internal exchange of resources. And for instance, there were four teachers that were given from the school department to museums for the educational purpose. So if I were a private museum, perhaps that would be emerging as an information. I have 200 million lira more as a funding, and I have 200 million lira more as a cost. So you have to, in a sense, make this kind of change in the accounting representation. And also there was 30 million lira of additional resources kept for coin collection and research and so on. So doing this, and you look at the total value now, rather than 88% being what the municipality is funding to the museum, is just 81%. So in a sense, they were able to get resources elsewhere. Okay. So what shall I do if I were a director with this information? I could try to compare with some competitors. They are not competitors. Finding a bloody financial statement of museum took me almost 1 year. There was a research done by some colleague that was on the National Gallery of National Galleria Nazionale d'Arte Moderna. The other is the History of Science in Florence, Now there is a provincial museum in Lecce, and the other is the Paul di Pezzoli, that's a private museum in Milan. That was a research, and I was taking this research, and okay, I can compare and add. But the data was old, so I had to get updated resources, information. So I was calling the Paul di Pezzoli Museum. I say, I'm Luca Zani, University of Bologna. I would like to have the, okay, thanks. They sent me in a matter of a week. The was not on the website, but they sent me in a few days. The National Academy, they don't have, like Pompeii, they don't know what the cost of personnel is. you shouldn't laugh, that's a reality. That's the reality. The History of Science Museum is funny. There was a Galluzzi that was the dean of the group within CNR, the National Center of Research we were working in, and he was the boss of hundreds of teams, including my team, and it took 6 months for him to send me not the financial statement, but just the table that I sent him. Tell me which information do you want, and I will write it down. So. Once again, we should learn from the British Museum in terms of information disclosure. This is a serious issue. And the museum in Lecce sent me after 6 months. Okay, so I got this 4 or 5 museums, which is not that much. You know, when we're talking the rhetoric of benchmarking, you know, you can compare, you should compare. Compare with whom? There are no museums report, are not available in our country. I remember when I was in one of the best conferences in my life was within the Forbidden City, and I had 60 operators of the Forbidden City with a good translator, and I gave my presentation, Italy, blah, 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 and one Chinese asked me, what is the normal structure of cost of Italian museums? Who knows? That's something that nobody really knows. So, but I made this kind of exercise. And then I start comparing. And I start comparing, and if you, a bit of game of numbers, not taking too seriously, but just to have an idea. And then it's interesting to see, for instance, if you take visitor per employee, Bologna, that seems to be a sign of efficiency. The more visitor you do with less employees means that you are more effective in getting visitors. So interesting to know the local authority museum of the archaeological is much more efficient than the private one. It's doing it with more than the double. So in a sense, it's much more efficient. And that's a risk here to in this comparison. They could have different rate of outsourcing, and it's very likely that the private museum, Paul di Pezzoli, do not really need to outsource as public museum. Because that's a footnote, but an important footnote. Outsourcing in the public sector is really biased. I mean, normally organizations do outsourcing for very serious things, skills, competencies, knowledge, flexibility in this kind of things. Here in the public sector, we do simply to avoid the law. We are all trying to overcome law and legal constraints. Okay, so this outsourcing it's not because you have different solutions. You simply have to bypass, try to overcome the law. But interesting enough, let's say, consider all cost, whether you spend cost for make or buy, for people or for services that you buy. What's this parameter? And you see here, I mean, not available for the Galleria Nazionale d'Arte Moderna, History of Science is very costly. I mean, it's really cost a lot. The Paul di Pezzoli cost more than the archaeological. It's funny, isn't it? I mean, I think we have somewhere, somehow, sometime, levels of efficiency in public sector that are difficult to find elsewhere. I mean, we are 80 people in our department. With a block of turnover, we have two secretaries. I don't think that in any private firm you will find this kind of ratio. And maybe it's better if we lose one of them also, we will increase our efficiency. But cost per square meter, this is also interesting in terms of cost per employee. This is an interesting idea of how much you add value. Other than paying salaries, do you do something? So, in a sense, on my previous qualitative research, we have clear evidence that in terms of service, in terms of collection, in terms of presentation, it's a relatively good, well-managed museum. Here we have this information which is also interesting. And you see these strange parameters. And so basically that means that every employees that you use, you're able to generate or to manage resources for 140 million lira. At that time, more or less, the total cost, global cost of an employee was around 50 million per year, not what you get on the pocket, but what the cost. So, and this is interesting because this, if you take the museum in Lecce, in a sense, they've gone too far. Basically, they just pay salary, a bit of eating, a bit of something, and then they have no resources to do anything. So that is too low, in a sense. It's efficiency because they are doing nothing, basically. And you should be very careful in handling this data. So this is, in a sense, interesting enough, is once again better, more efficient compared to the Paul Di Pezzoli, in a sense. It's adding value in a more generous way. So, I mean, these are, benchmarking is always an interesting exercise if you take it as it is, not too seriously, but can address something, I mean, of course. And what I'm rather sure in stating, what emerged from these figures, don't take too seriously, but at least what is clear is not so badly managed compared to a private museum. I mean, if you consider the one of Lecce, it's really, you know, no resources arise on its own, just resources to pay salaries, so. And that is interesting in my view. I mean, if I go back to my framework, trying to summarize, and we have also some kind of, you know, qualitative information, number of visitors, not that bad, opening hours is okay, a very good record in didactics, they have 50,000 student school, elementary and middle school, a year, they do research, they are well reputed in terms of the way in which they do education, homepage, and the record of things that are scientific publication. In terms of substantive aspect, in terms of procedure, I would say be careful on the way you present visitors, because that was the clear risk of misleading meaning of performance, and the way in which you present all this kind of thing. You can improve, of course. You can always do a customer satisfaction analysis. No one really do customer satisfaction analysis, but everyone talks about customer satisfaction analysis. You could do it. But now, no serious problem. I mean, it's not the Pompeii problem we had yesterday in terms of, you know, quality of visits, the dogs, blah, 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 blah. And here, if you look at, in substantive terms, in terms of efficiency, I would say, more or less, it would ask more and more detail for the analysis, but what is clearly is not that bad in terms of performance indicators. In terms of earned income, is clearly far from the American museums, but is compared to the Italian one, getting 20% of resources on the market in 1998 is not that bad. So, comparatively speaking, it's not that bad. What is curious to see is, compared to the director of the Paul Di Pezzoli, who can look at his financial statement and accounting numbers in a second, the director of the local authority museum do not have this information at all. And I had to spend 1 week at such a brilliant scholar, still me, and had to invent this stupid kind of game and spend wasting 6 months to get this for data to benchmark with. That's crazy. That is crazy. And we are talking about, you know, managerial responsibility. So, and this construction of the virtual income statement. This is what I call unfair game of managerialism in this public sector, in this part of the public sector, in the local authority museum. You have more or less good performance in terms of demand side, with minor problems in terms of procedures and information that you could improve, of course, as always. What is really bizarre, you don't have information, you don't have the right to understand and to know your performance. Nonetheless, your performance are not so bad. So it's really, you know, if there is something in the managerial game, which is the issue of responsibility and accountability, this is totally overcome. This is totally a short circuit in this situation. And you are asked to behave managerially without having the basic information. So, and this is one of the best situation in Italy, or used to be at that time one of the best situations. In the same years, I was called by Turin. We would like to understand what the cost of our museums are. And that was the case of Venice, and that was the case of Milan. I'm not talking about Bargellino, you know, they are the most important museums in the city, in the country. So, basically, this is what is the unfair game of managerialism. Managerialism, management taken seriously, is a totally different kind of rhetoric. That's going back to yesterday. I mean, in Venice, in the 16th century, they were much more consistent with managerial discourse. They were defining targets, they were defining budgets, they were defining, giving information and report. I mean, if you take a textbook, it's, you know, the management approach, you define goal, you define resources, then you have actions, and then you measure results, and you interpret the variation, and then that is the information that you need to understand your performance and to understand how you should change your behavior. And this is simply a broken chain. You don't have this chain, you're asked to be managerial without this basic information. There is this decoupling between decision and resource allocation, which is, we were talking yesterday, which is normal in Italian public sector, I'm not sure also in Spain, but for instance, just to give an example, when we decide, I was trying to propose to run this program on management, arts management, University of Bologna, and I was preparing the budget, I was preparing all the rationale, and I was talking, and I was going to the rector, and I was going on the faculty meeting, and the decision was, yes, let's start. The decision was not, yes, let's start, comma, this is the budget. You make a decision without committing resources. And then there is the kind of endless political game, which has two possible paths. One is, we already made the decision, so please give me the resources. But you waste an enormous amount of time in bargaining, arguing the decision was made. It's not like my friend in the US that has an account for this course and can already use it and manage it, rather than, or the other way is simply you make the project a continuous sort of compromise. I thought I was going to make an international program. I thought I was going to have at least two or three international guests every year. I can't do it, so it will be one. It will be like the unfinished. Will be like the example yesterday of the unfinished symphony, and you will really end up with this kind of killing. I mean, the basically this is public sector in Italy. You cannot. You made decisions that are committing energies, ideas, and projects for years, and you have 1 year funding. And every year, each of us spending 2/3 of our time in this endless bargaining process rather than managing. You know, it's not just a question of resources. I mean, why people try to privatize or to lose the status of public sector? One is to try to find money from private sector. It doesn't work that much, at least in Italy. The second is to get freedom in the management of personnel in an over-unionized kind of sector. And third, try to get rid of the stupidity of red tape that are affecting our public sector organization. So, and there's nothing to do with, I mean, I still have my first budget with my program when I went to the rector. He didn't want to see it. It's really a debudgeting process. You know, you think, and I think because that's my professional DNA, I mean, that's my culture, no one ever forced me to prepare a budget, a real budget, a global budget. And from time to time, yes, for this item, because there is a special funding for that, you know, with all this kind of itemized budget. So, this is a bit general. Just go to the end. I mean, all this debate on devolution, transferring museums' size from the state to the local authority, is, to me, I'm sorry, I don't understand. I know local issue here in Catalonia and a different tradition of devolution and local identity, not in Italy, to be honest. And the fact that Pompeii would be transferred to Campania, Jesus Christ, no, please, no, please. There's nothing. That's a UNESCO site. It's something pertaining to human being that could be managed, reported to any entity in the world, directly to UNESCO, directly to UN, directly to Rome, or whatever it is. There's nothing to do with localism in that sense for the case of Pompeii. So the issue is organizational. Devolution, decentralization is organizational, not geographical. So that is why we have this wave of privatization and all this rhetoric of privatization. I mean, there's no way, I mean, transforming public sector is so difficult all over the world. Finding the clever solution of the one block grant is so difficult in any local authority or state organization. So, is there any third way between wild privatization and state centralization? And it's really an issue of institutional transformation, giving control on resources, people and money, and procedures. And the one block grant is really the change, you know, it's really a turning point in administrative history, I would say. Re-establishing a focus on resources and the relation between resources and goals, and ways that could help the political, serious, still needed serious political game of defining trade-offs, which is always a problem. We have limited resources, so we can't do anything. We have to decide, make compromise, and try to define that. In Italy, we have this wave of operating foundation as a solution. I still remember the face of my American student the first time I was there teaching them that privatization does not involve private actors. Something strange with your English. I really remember their faces, and I realized how it is so normal for us because of the Latin blood, perhaps. But it's so unusual if you don't live in this context. We are talking about privatization, which is not actually privatization. Oh, yes, someone do try to privatize. I mean, the Ministry of Defense was trying to sell the arsenal of Daniels for music, for making hotels and a resort of this kind. But that is no later than 1 year ago. But apart from this, I mean, I guess so far institutional mechanisms are still strong to stop that so far. In the long run, you know, that would be dangerous also. But actually, it's not an issue of selling properties. It's not an issue. It's simply defining new governance structures, new administrative rules. And if possible, without spending too much on this kind of abuses of managerial rhetoric. Unfortunately, there are lots of examples, a lot of mistakes, a lot of things that do not work. I mean, the British Museum itself, yesterday I was talking on the nice aspect of the great, interesting innovation of the one block grant. But also, in the case of the British Museum, within all this kind of abuses of, you know, managerialism, with the new managing director, with conflicts that for years was really close to cause the bankruptcy of the British Museum, both financially and from an organizational point of view, really a serious crisis. We had opera houses in Italy. You know, everything in Italy happens by law. We have a law that transforms opera houses from enti lirici, that was their previous status as public entities, into private law foundations, with the hope that private investor will come. And the rhetoric is there just to allow more easy, more predictable condition for managing. The private did not come, just marginally, the Scala, of course, is another issue, but on the rest was very, very minimal. And this, you know, that's the rhetoric of, involved with the private. I mean, the philanthropy is a bloody American phenomenon. In the American related, perhaps in Canada, and New Zealand, and Australia as well, but it's nowhere else. So we have this kind of half-Americanization. I mean, we are importing a new discourse about cost, but the revenues are not moving as they are moving in the America. I mean, usually, tell me if I'm wrong, on average, the earned income by American museums is not far bigger than 30-40%, which is much bigger than the Italian one. Then you have donors. We have a prime minister with a football team. Our wealthy people buy football teams. Moratti with the Inter in 10 years spent more than what was asked for the piano per Pompeii. So we don't have donors, we don't have philanthropy. In Spain, that's a discussion I had with my friends at Carnegie Mellon, then had the half of the classes students from China, Korea, and they're teaching fundraising. Come on, it won't work when you get back to China. What hell are you doing with the notion of philanthropy? It didn't work. It simply didn't work. And almost all of them, apart from the Scala, are close to bankruptcy. This year, perhaps they will cut one third of their allocation. Can you imagine cutting one third of the Genova is very the talk is going to keep to bring the books in for bankruptcy. And this is funny, nothing really happened after the law. I mean, the last 2 years are making some noise in terms of, because of the crisis, but this is not the crisis of the last 2 years. They were already ready for bankruptcy 2 years ago. It's just, you know, the barrier to exit from a social point of view. And it's interesting, I have a, this is another issue. Talking about the Comunale in Bologna, I was observing what I define as Italian Thatcherism. In 10 years' time, they cut financial resources of one-fourth, 25% in real terms. No, the single cut in terms of personnel. So there's a kind of crazy asymmetry. Now we are able to cut financial resources, we are unable to touch personnel. That is the left wing because it's, and the right wing because it's, you know, we are the crazy, I think we have the craziest right wing. I mean, the problem with the left wing are similar. The right wing in Italy is such a, there's nothing much different than Thatcherism than our right wing. I mean, we have even the social right, no, the social right wing, that are even more deficit spending than the radical left wing. So, sorry, but it simply didn't work. That's an interesting other example, the Museum of Ceramic in Faenza. And it's funny, it was, we just wrote a paper on 100 years history of this, and it's fascinating because it was born in 1908 as an association, private law museum, and it ran for 60 years like that. In 1974, it was transformed into public museum. And it's fascinating when you read on the memo of 100 years, the way in which they were suiciding, they were just asking to be transformed into public entity. And you won't ever image what was the rationale and the reason. To get money, isn't it ironic? How could you hope to get money? And that was the reason why they were asking to be transformed into a public entity. And then you see year after year that they were losing control, they were just being marginalized by the city bureaucrats, and they were just trying to understand what autonomy, the risk of losing autonomy is, and they were trying to go back and try to have a new status of institution, and then after 2 years, a new status of foundation. So we have this 100 years with four institutional transformation, with the rhetoric of transformation, and interesting enough, in 100 years, never a single business plan. It's fascinating. And it's a crazy, this is also a crazy institutional transformation into foundation, where privates are involved, but are not involved to fund the back office, are just involved on special projects, which I think is really, this is another very risky situation in the diffusion of managerialism in this sector. Everyone is willing, everyone, those that are willing to pay, wants to pay for specific ad hoc additional projects. I want to sponsor something, I could, that's something that is mine, that's marginal and additional. No one pays for the back office. That's another. The Piano Museum, that's another. That's unbelievable how stupid the situation could be. I mean, that was a very nice case study on the Accademia Pianistica in Imola. It's a very famous, very high quality high school for concert player, getting prizes all over the world, very famous with the articles in the newspaper. And I was studying this research and it was fascinating, this the civil society organizing itself and making this out of any public sector, etc. And in parallel, the founder of this school had a passion for collecting piano. He has collected 118 piano. Well, a living instrument, it's not just the furniture, it's the objects of sound, so to speak. You can play them and you can use them at the school. And I remember one of the best performances ever in my life, they bring 12 piano of different age, and they had this 3 hours conference sold out, where there was one of the piano player, and there was a technician, a restorer of piano, that was explaining the history of technology, and the piano player was making you listen the difference of sound. I never thought that could be possible. Listening to a piano, particularly in a 40 years time, between around the end of the 17th century, beginning of the 18th century, beginning of the 19th century, it's like, just to give an idea, the difference in sound between the electric guitar and the nylon guitar. That's the difference of sound. And can you imagine when you have pieces written in different places and sung with all this stupid, trivial Steinberg piano that we have now, with no personality, which is false, totally false. And that was 3 hours of, education on sounds, not on the furniture of piano. And they were trying to transform this personal collection, into a museum. And there was a endless discussion between himself, the founder, and the saving agency, the saving bank in Imola, and the municipality, to share the collection. Basically, he wanted to get some money for the collection, and they were spending years and years, and saying, come on, this is not the point. I mean, if you want to get rid of your collection, that's your personal, understand. But museum is not a collection. When you have the collection shared by who is going to cover the cost? What would be the running cost of this entity? Who is going to pay? Who is willing to pay for this? And I guess if you just make a bigger account, I mean, it would cost a fortune, will be unique perhaps. Getting people to Imola is not that easy, so perhaps it's something that you could do, but the problem is not who's going to pay the collection. It's really an issue of running cost, running deficit, covering the running deficit. Try to find some institution that can sign an agreement for the next 30 years, because if it's signed for 1 year, I don't care. I don't waste my time for that. There are this kind of, our culture is dominated by macroeconomists and lawyers, basically. And no one really addresses the issue of organizing and long-term sustainability. There are two other interesting examples here. One is the Egyptian Museum. Another huge discussion, I was in Turin at the time, was a Winter Olympics game, and there are two very, very, very rich foundations, perhaps two of the richest foundations, a bank foundation, that was competing, which is other to the most, with a lot of plans of refurbishing and restructuring the museum, opening the museum. And then we were trying to make some kind of calculation, and whatever you do, I mean, it will be very difficult that you have more than 400,000 visitors. I mean, physically speaking, it's impossible to get there if you get more. So if that works, that means that this will be on deficit forever. Earned income will cover just 30%. Who is going to cover the rest? Rather than wasting your energy, time, and attention, and this going back to the management as addressing attention, address the attention on how you can cover the structural deficit, as in any other museum in the world, in the Western world. And that was the discussion that was going on for years and years. And then the ministry and the foundation understood, the bank foundation understood, that was the issue. So there is an initial cost, which is nothing compared to what will happen later. There are a deficit, and the deficit is normal. Operating deficit is the rule in the West. Earned income is a marginal part of, whether it's so marginal or a bit less marginal, but it's a part. Another interesting example I'm going to finish with is the museums in Milan. That was really a nice exercise. The local authority museums, very important museums by the municipality of Milan, that was a very well-enlightened right-wing assessor. It was, I want to have an institutional transformation of this museum. I don't want to cut a lira. I want simply to transform the management structure. And it was really such a nice exercise that was explicitly put. I mean, we are not going to cut any single penny. We are just transforming. And there was a very interesting element in that. That is, first, who are you going to transform? And my point was just museums that are operating. Opened and operating. There was a huge discussion on the Museo delle Culture Extraeuropee, very funny, the right-wing local government supported by the Liga, which is xenophobia, and were opening a museum on extra-European culture. It's great, sometimes irrationality in politics. But that was a completely question mark. I mean, there was a 6 billion lira for the design to Chatterfield, but then what would be the cost of refurbishing the whole Ansaldo, and it was an old building, an old industrial archaeology building. Nobody really knew. And what would be the running cost, nobody really knew. So you can't give someone the responsibility for something that nobody really knows. This is the role of politics. You want to do it, you risk your face in doing it, in doing this investing, in finding sponsor and finding money. That's your job as politicians, as an administrator. This is not my job. I want to know what costs are, what costs can be improved, what costs can be should be cut it down or should be increased, and so on, and I take the responsibility of that. So we had this definition of what, just operating, and this is a clear distinction between decision, policy decision, and running entities and responsibility for that. And then it was a very nice, very creative accounting exercise, because just to give numbers, that was at that time 50 billion lira was the cost, according to the accounting system, for the local authority museum. And the director called me. She was a curator. She was, by the way, the previous director of the Pol di Pezzoli. And she called me, Luca, I don't trust them. I trust you. I don't understand all this accounting. I trust you. Please tell me. If they give me the one block grant of 50 billion lira, it's okay, or is there any kind of hidden cut? And we spent an enormous amount of time doing a very nice exercise, trying to make what are hidden costs emerge. You know, all the kind of internal exchange. And in the end, you know, the other thing, that what you see in the account is the impact of the previous situation. Maybe in the last 10 months, 1 or 2 years, you already made decisions that are not still impacting the account. But if you take the responsibility without knowing that the cost of the aquarium will increase because they're already restoring the technologies and so on. So there was a nice exercise in trying to see, these are the costs now, these are the costs that are not visible but are provided in kind. These are the costs that are not visible but are already agreed upon, and it's not our responsibility. These are the costs that will increase, because if you have a foundation, you should have an accounting office, you should have a legal office, and that is from 50 million, we got up to 68 million. So if the exercise is, you don't want to cut any resources, you have to provide one block grant of 68. Of course, that then there is your problem, that perhaps you have people that will do less inside the municipality of Milan, but that's your business in managing people that are left inside the municipality of Milan. And that was a very interesting chapter in my book. I think I learned a lot, and that's it. Nothing really happened, because, you know, this is really, that was a political accident between the different parties, and then there was election, then nothing really happened. But the reason why that did not really happen, that's a way of discipline, the relationship between politics and administrators. It's not that you can come any day and say anything. If I'm taking responsibility of running these organizations according to this one block grant, according to these resources, this is something that you can discuss with me as a sort of shareholder in the meeting of the shareholders at the end of the year, or at the end of the 3 years, perhaps. It's not something that you can just knock on my door and say, do that and do this, as normally politicians do in the kind of context. And it's normally professional led them to do. So nothing really happened, but I wrote a very interesting chapter. So that was simply a very abstract simulation, but it was a very nice exercise. By the way, last was 2 years ago, and I was in my sabbatical, a beautiful sabbatical, in the library in Princeton. They called me back, and we want to go ahead with that project almost 7, 10, 8 years later. And we want to do a foundation of science museum, just the scientific museum. Could you come back? And they're, come on, don't joke. And they say, okay, this time we're going to do things seriously. And I have PhD students, and I had to make them eat. So I'm sensible to charge an enormous amount of money. And we do a beautiful exercise, interesting exercise. We're much grown now, much wiser, and we learn a lot, so we did a beautiful project. Nothing really is going to happen again, but this is the kind of... But in a sense, it's funny. I mean, their transformation is damn needed. Their transformation into foundation is one of the possible solutions. There are so many example of pitfall and mistakes and problems that still have. And you know, as a management expert, as management scholar, I never trust anyone. So my suggestion in your transformation, okay, go there and see seriously. You know, maybe you're much better, I hope you are much better than we are in Italy. But even all this transformation that are taking place on the paper, try to see really, you know, what the kind of actual processes, the pitfall, it's not, you know, the institutional transformation is not one thing, you see, yes and no. You can do in many, with different, many graduation, with the different solution on individual elements, and that's. But what is clear, just to prepare the next, I mean, it's the difficulty. It's really in our country the difficult of trying to do something inside the public sector. That's really one of the problems that explain all this tentative, all this example of more or less clever. Sometimes they are clever. Sometimes they are even more crazy than public sector itself. But this is the context of this country. Yeah.
Sembla, Thanks again for a wonderful talk. I just wanted to underscore and applaud the methods that you use and the importance in them of qualitative methods. In this talk and other talks, you've given so many wonderful examples of how absolutely essential qualitative research is in order to understand the chaos and complexity that really is real ongoing social life, whether it's museums or anything else. And you've also given some examples that speak to criticisms that are given to qualitative by people who don't think it should be used. For example, it takes too much time. So your study in Pompeii that you spoke about yesterday was relatively short, and it yielded an incredible amount of really important information and understanding. And the example you gave today of the two slides, where you had the first slide indicating that there was the decline in attendance and then the related business of what was going on with the shows, but then adding to that in this qualitative way, you really have to understand what these exhibits are and who controls them, because if you don't look at the issue of accountability, you can't understand. So I just wanted to really underscore that, because I think you've given us just beautiful examples of the importance of qualitative research.
You know, on Pompeii, I remember, because I made this exercise, I think I worked on the paper of Pompeii about 70 days. 70 days is a lot. It's 3 months and a half full time. And I don't think there are so many opportunities for me right now. It's a question of life cycle, age, and position to find 70 days to do research. But if you want, I mean, you have to spend 4 afternoons with the superintendente to understand this. And you have this consultant that are coming and passing and just don't even realize what they don't, you know. And that's a question, you know, when I was talking yesterday about the modest approach, it's really understanding seriously how you can, the different biases of each of us, the different backgrounds and skills can combine. I mean, and it's so time consuming. I mean, and there is an economics in that, and that's why it's not so widespread, because it's so costly. And it's costly for the consultant, and it's costly for this crazy system of academics, of publish and publish, so you don't have to waste time as a student or as a PhD student for your career development to waste your time understanding what else is happening in Pompeii. Who cares? You need to write a paper. So, but it's really, you know, it's going back with the question of yesterday, what do you think is management? You have to go there, you have to understand, you have to see how it is constructed and done. And also, I have to try to link as much as possible with quantitative data. I mean, I always have this, I understand that, I mean, financial accounting that is using most of the public sector is so difficult, so stupid. But this kind of snobbish attitude by archaeologists, curators, not to look at the accounts, I mean, that's your survival. It's not something for the accountants. Accounting is too serious to be left to accountants. That's a joke.